Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week, Jan Hicks from Jan Hicks Creates. Welcome, Jan.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here, Gary.
Yeah, looking forward to this conversation. Yes, you do all kinds of fun stuff.
Kind of crazy out there in the stitching world.
Yep, all kinds. Yeah, I listened to a handful of your floss tubes and enjoy them. Yep.
Thanks.
Interesting stuff. Now, what caught my eye as your most recent one was your work with Cosmo threads.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm doing with our meditative stitching, I'm doing the Avalia basket weave thing, and Kim Young at Sassy Jacks put together a colorway for me with Cosmo threads, and I'm really liking them.
Yeah.
There's a different quality to them, I think, is really good.
And I agree, and I was rather surprised. I really didn't expect there to be a different quality. I mean, you think cotton thread, right?
Yeah.
But, I am rather amazed at the difference in the quality.
I thought you hit it on the head. I couldn't put my finger on it till I watched your floss tube where you talked about how through the stitching of a strand, it holds up better.
Yeah, it is more... I tried to do a side-by-side just visual comparison of RFIL and DMC, and I think it's hard to see it visually, but I believe the Cosmo is slightly more tightly twisted whenever it's spun into the thread, and whenever it's spun more tightly, it can handle the abrasion better, and you can see that clearly in this thread.
Yes. Yeah, well, it was, for me, There's something I like about this, but I can't figure it out. And then when you voiced that, it was bingo. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the way to the end of the strand, it's holding up. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think it knots as quickly either, or as much.
No. Yeah, I didn't find that. Yeah, I don't recall it knotting at all. Yeah. Have you used it? I have exactly 6 skeins of it. So
that's what I have.
Okay. So you've not designed with it or anything.
No, this was my first one, and this purely came about. Well, it first came to my attention when I watched Gene Farish's floss tube of 2 or 3 ago. I don't remember which number. And, she sings high praises for Cosmo. And I thought, well, that's nice, but, I have the whole set of DMC and multiple skeins of so many of the colors. It's kind of late in the game to be switching over.
Yeah.
But it turns out that, I used to work at a yarn store in Sarasota called A Good Yarn. And I was in a conversation with the owner there, whom I'm still friends with. And she said, oh, yeah, I carry the whole line of Cosmo. And I said, Susan, I should design something and we can collaborate. You can offer the floss pack. I'll offer the design. And she's like, why didn't we think of this before? So she sent me the skeins to work with. And what I hope to do is every quarter do a new design where she provides the floss pack. And then, kind of slowly build my collection over time with that.
Yeah. Now, I have not explored it. I mean, Kim at Sassy Jacks has the full line, but I haven't even looked to see what the full line consists of. Is it 300-400 colors, or what are we looking at?
It's not quite as many as DMC, but I think it is like 470-ish, somewhere in there.
Oh, well, should be able to work with that.
Yes, and then they also have kind of the variegated as well.
Yes.
I think they call those seasons or something like that. I haven't worked with those at all. So, with that number of colors, and they seem to, from the floss card that Gene Farish showed, they seem to have a nice dark to light for the whole range, for all the different colors.
Mm-hmm.
And it's laid out nicely. So, I'm looking forward to exploring it more.
Yeah, and I say I had 5 skeins, but I forgot that Kim had sent me just to test a couple of the variegated ones. And I'm always curious on the variegation, if it's really abrupt or gradual. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to be a nice gradual move through the colors in the variegation. So, because those abrupt ones bother me. I'm not a big variegated fan anyway, but the ones that are really abrupt, like DMC stuff, whatever that is called, it's just, to me, it's just too, the color changes are too blunt. I don't like it.
Yeah, I know what you mean, and it creates a much more stripey effect.
So it's interesting that it even comes up, because we look at DMC as the gold standard. I mean, it's what you can get everywhere. It's what everybody uses. Everybody has at least a conversion for it in their designs, and you expect it to be the best, I guess. But then when a thread like Cosmo, it really, I can you safely say it's a better thread, or is it just different?
I think it's a better, I totally think it's a better thread. I've not explored on the website. Like Cosmo, I know, says that it is made by the highest quality long staple Egyptian cotton. That sounds pretty impressive. I don't know whether DMC says the same thing or not. But yeah, I totally think it's a different, it's a better thread. Now the price kind of reflects that, but it's not that much more expensive. So,
Yeah,
yeah.
well, I look at that too in terms of these days, where the supply chains are so fractured that you start to look at, well, DMC you can usually get everywhere, but now most shops are struggling to, they'll send out a floss pack, but they're missing one color, and it's going to be a couple weeks before they get it. And so you start to look at the what are some alternatives, and this one just seems to be a good alternative.
It does. And I find it interesting, and I don't know what the reason is, but I find it interesting that it seems to be higher end shops or like quilt stores seem to carry Cosmo. And I don't know whether that's because I think Susan at A Good Yarn carries it because she likes the embroidery of Sue Spargo, the wool applique embroidery. And it may be the thread that Sue Spargo uses, and so that would kind of tie into the quilt world as well. But yeah, I don't know why it's not more widely even known about in the cross stitch world.
Yeah, I don't either, 'cause it's lovely to stitch with. It really
It is.
just flows right through, it seems. Well, Sue Spargo would be a good reason to carry a line. That
To say the least.
yeah. Her stuff's pretty amazing.
It is.
Yeah, that
It
would be
is.
justification enough for me right there.
Yes. Yep.
And then the other one, somebody sent me a sample of the Mrs. Sadus silk
Oh, okay.
that you've been playing with.
Oh,
And
yeah.
I just ran it through some cloth a couple times just to see what it was like. And when I saw you'd been playing with it, I wanted to ask you about that in comparison to other silks. Do you like that? Does it hold up?
I do. I do. So let me give you a little background with Mrs. Sadus, and Raquel is the name of the woman in Spain who is Mrs. Sadus. I first saw her post something on Instagram. Oh, it's probably been a year ago now, and she posted one of her big skeins of silk, and the price she was asking for this. Now, coming from the knitting world, I look at yardage and I have an idea of how much yardage and how far it can go and what the cost is in the knitting world. And I looked at this skein of silk that was, oh goodness, I forget how many yards now, 250 yards, I think. And the price she was asking was like, holy cow, I need to get my hands on this. Either this is really, really junky quality or I've just struck gold. Well, I feel like I've struck gold because the quality, it is a, again, it is a, it's a filament silk that holds up really, really well. I have used, I won't say all the different silks out there. I've used a lot of them. And of course you have the silks that pill more and the silks that are a higher quality and more tightly twisted that hold up better. And hers is one of those that holds up better. I love the fact that I'm supporting this woman who really just started out last year. I have can honestly say I've had a huge impact in her business and supporting her business and spreading the word, and that really makes me happy. And her colors are fantastic. She has a great eye for color, and yeah, just everything about it makes me happy.
I didn't realize she was that new to the market.
Yeah, she is.
I thought that was one of those that have been around for decades and was just now getting discovered, but
No.
No, well, the one skein I have, it seems like really nice silk, but yeah, it was just a here's one to play with kind of thing.
Right,
Yeah,
right.
yeah. And at some point, yeah, just I run out of time to just play with. So,
Oh, I know, and
yeah.
there's so much to play with.
Yeah. So from the knitting world, was that the first thing that you did with needles?
No, I taught myself to stitch, to cross stitch when I was in high school. My mother had some Aida and some floss sitting in a basket, and I just picked it up and started stitching. Just making kind of a geometric design. And I don't remember doing a whole lot with it in high school, but out of college, I was hired by the federal government, moved down to Maryland, and I finally had a salary of my own, such as it was, a
How cool
grade
is
seven in
that?
1987.
Yeah.
And I lived not too far from the cross stitch store in Baltimore called the Stitching Post in Catonsville, Maryland,
Yes.
and they got a lot of my money. And that's really where I started. I didn't learn to knit until, oh, early 90s, I guess. And then, of course, I got married and had kids and didn't do as much with the stitching, because I didn't want to leave my floss and my needles laying around. Did a little bit more with the knitting, started scrapbooking, started stamping, was hired by a scrapbooking store in Maryland. Started digital scrapbooking, did online, worked with an online digital scrapbooking store, making products for them and teaching. I've taught across all of the different crafts that I've been involved with. Moved to Florida, started working at the yarn store there, and was heavily, of course, into knitting and teaching and making models. So there was really not a whole lot of stitching, probably from the late 90s to 2017 when I came back to it and found a whole different world.
Yeah, that's a span of change right there, no question. Yeah. Yeah.
But I feel like all the different things that I have done in my crafting life have kind of led me right to this point where I'm comfortable with designing, I'm comfortable with converting colors, I'm comfortable with layout. All the experience that I got from the scrapbooking world
Yeah.
has just led me to this point.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say that very thing. May not have been stitching, but the fundamentals across all those different crafts are pretty much the same. And you just develop your skills in different ways. Yeah.
It's
That's scrap.
still all creating, and I can't.
Right.
I'm a person who I have to create.
That scrapbooking thing, that boy, that was a rapid rise, rapid fall kind of thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really had a boom time. I mean, digital scrapbooking is still out there. The store that I originally worked with is still going strong, but it certainly had its heyday in the 90s.
Yeah. What is that what it evolved into? Is digital scrapbooking? What is that? Just moving pieces around and putting together pages on your computer?
Yeah, so you work in Photoshop or Photoshop Elements, designing the layout and all of the elements instead of a hard button, it's a digital button, and so you
Yeah.
have your photos that are all digital, right?
Yeah.
And you just have all this stuff in Photoshop, something like Photoshop Elements, and create layers, and then you have a layout that you can print out and put in an album or put in a frame or anything like that.
Oh, okay. Seems to take away the fun of cutting out and stamping
Oh
and
no, oh no. Get rid of all of that stuff. I had a room full of stamping and scrapbooking supplies. And again, when I got rid of it, certainly one of my husband's happiest days. But yeah, it was a sense of relief to just let that all go.
okay. Yeah. Yeah, that was just as I just remember here in the Chicago area, several stores popped up,
Oh
scrapbooking
yeah.
stores, and then it seemed like next time I was through that area, they were gone.
They were
And
gone.
yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
And yeah, and a material intensive hobby.
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all right. So then you okay, yeah, that so you went through the usual thing with raising kids, and then the stitching needlework kind of has to fall take a back seat to
Take a back
yeah.
seat. Yep.
the realities of life.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you start, when you really kind of get back to it, kids are grown, then was it a design thing or?
No, it was my fingers are itching to stitch. I've been knitting and knitting and knitting like a maniac for how many years now? I want to get back to my stitching. And so that was just a matter of starting to search on the web and seeing all these stores and seeing Etsy and Facebook having all these groups. So I really just dove in completely back into the stitching world. My designing, I hadn't even considered it until a friend visited my husband and I when we were out in Hawaii. They came out last year and she said, you know, she does not do full coverage stitching at all. But she said, you know, Jan, looking at the full coverage things that you like to do, she said, your pictures would make awesome full coverage designs. And I went, well, that's an idea. And I ruminated and I thought and I started looking at different software. And I thought, well, you know, and I talked to my husband. And again, the whole being comfortable with a computer, being comfortable with color, it all led me to making it very easy for me to find some cross stitch software and start working in it and see what happened. And here I am.
Yeah. Well, your photography intrigues me because I'm a photographer, though I have to admit in the past 4 or 5 years, I've not done a whole lot of it from doing it, you know, almost around the clock some days. And actually thinking of seriously, I'm going to sell my digital SLR lenses and equipment because I just don't use them anymore. And, you know, these phones anymore are just so good that, you know, the thought of hauling a big bag of gear around. What is your photography like? Is it just a point and shoot camera or do you haul the tripod and all the gear?
Nope, it's an iPhone.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, and I followed that same trajectory where I had all the equipment and the lenses, and like you said, the phones just kept getting better and better, and the best camera is the one that you have with you.
Right.
And my phone is always with me, and we just keep upgrading the iPhone so that I have that camera that I need, and I'm very aware, even with my pictures of my designs, of lighting and placement and, you know, just the whole shoot aspect of it. Part of that is from the scrapbooking world as well, wanting to have the best pictures for a layout when you want to promote your product. And but I slowly just was like, why am I lugging this big camera around when I have an iPhone? You know, we haven't yet upgraded to the one with the three lenses, but I expect that's going to happen before the end of the year.
Yeah. So. Well, that's the, you know, that's the crazy thing about it. Cause we, when this COVID thing started, we were doing, outside church services. And so, you know, can I help with that? Sure. And so I got out my bag of DSLR lenses and stuff, big tripod, to my camera will do video, and hauled that so you had good quality lens to do the thing. And the first time I did, it's like, oh, I forgot about all this weight, you know, and all this gear that you have to haul around. And then you know, when we started doing live shows here with Fiber Talk, my first thought was that, oh, good, I'll get my gear out and I'll use that. And I tried it a couple times and I said, why should I? I mean, my phone and the for YouTube and the camera in the laptop, they get the job done for that little rectangle that's there. And every phone just gets so much better. These new iPhone 12s and what they can do with photography is, I mean, it's in my pocket.
I can't wait to get my hand on that.
I know. Yes. I know. And you start to look at not only still photography, but then what you can do with video. And, you know, that becomes so easy. But the quality is just so good. And with HDR, high dynamic range and extreme light ranges in photos and, you know, you can do all that work in Photoshop, or you can let the iPhone do it for you.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm not looking to shoot photos that are going to win any awards.
Right.
I just, want to take pretty pictures. And luckily, my pretty pictures translate well to pretty cross-stitch designs.
Right, right. Well, so you took that advice then and just said, all right, I'm going to take a couple photos and see if I can convert them. Because you see people ask that question frequently. Is there who will help me convert a picture of my dog to cross-stitch? Because I want to cross-stitch that. So that was fairly straightforward for you?
It was. And, you know, I didn't even have to go out and take any photos. I have, you know, from all of the traveling that we've done, I have photos from all around this country that, you know, I think are pretty darn good. So, yeah, it's kind of hard to narrow down which ones I wanted to work on first, quite frankly. But, yeah, I think the hardest part was figuring out what cross-stitch software was out there. Unfortunately, for a Mac user, there's only one. That narrowed it down quite quickly. And then it was just a matter of, you know, my husband and I talked and I said, you know, should I or shouldn't I? And he said, you know, if it doesn't work out, the only thing you are out of is the money it costs for the software.
Yeah.
You know, I already had a website. We were both fairly savvy with working with a website. I had to figure out the shopping cart aspect of it. But other than that, it was just the time to learn the software. And it has some strange, you know, learning curves and strange ways of doing things when you're used to a Photoshop type environment.
Yeah, yeah.
But even that is, you know, it's you just learn it and figure it out and carry on.
Now, had you ever done full coverage? Had you stitched full coverage pieces before doing this?
Yes, yes. Oh, okay. And that's why it appealed to me so much, because I'm one of these people that I love intricate, detailed, big patterns. Mm. And the same was true in the knitting world. Give me intricate color work and I'm in heaven.
Okay. So right up your alley. Cause I've said 100 times, I admire people who do full coverage, but I have no interest in doing it.
Yeah. And that's just it. There's some people that it's their cup of tea, and thank heavens there's something for everybody out there. Right.
Yeah. Well, that's the beauty of this hobby. Yeah. If you don't like what you're doing, there's 15 other options. Yeah.
Yep.
No doubt about it. So when you do full coverage, are you a thread parker and a diagonal stitcher and that whole shoot and match?
You know, I don't follow rules very well.
Okay.
So, like, I started doing diagonal, but I look at pictures of people with their neat diagonals and they don't go out of the lines. And I think, my brain just does not work that way. My brain says, okay, I have this diagonal, but I have these stitches in that same color coming down here off the diagonal. I'm just going to do them. So yeah, I kind of sort of work on a diagonal, but I'm kind of a flowy diagonal.
Okay. Yeah. Just enough so you don't get the grid lines then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I don't park. I did that for a while, but I find since I am kind of coloring outside the line, if you will, I just use my thread until it's done and then go to a different color.
Okay, that works.
Yeah.
What is the mental reaction when you have a photograph you did and then you finish that same photograph stitched?
You're assuming that I've actually finished one.
Okay. Then that was a bold assumption.
Funny.
Sorry.
I've started several.
Okay. I knew I liked you.
I like what I see so far.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm a long way from ever finishing anything.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, because it's, you know, you ask the question, all right, I've got this beautiful photograph. I can make a beautiful print, put it in a frame, and then I can also stitch it. Does it take on a different characteristic when you stitch it? Does it have more depth?
Well, you know, it's funny you ask that, because I actually talked about that in one of my videos when I first started doing this. I love the thought of stitching all of my photos. And I said to my audience on my FlossTube channel, I said, you know, I tell myself, Jan, you're an idiot. You don't have enough time to stitch everything that you already have. and you think you're going to stitch all these full coverage pieces, just print it out. You have the picture, just print it out and put it in a frame. So, but there is something that draws me to the idea of creating these beautiful pictures in floss.
Is it watching it unfold as you stitch?
I think so. I think there's a lot of similarities between people that like to do jigsaw puzzles and people that like to cross stitch a full coverage piece. There's something about seeing the picture take shape, all these little bits and pieces that come together, all these colors that when you're up close and working on that little section, it doesn't look like anything. But when you step back, you can see the bigger picture.
Well, that's good. Now, I had not equated it that way, but yeah.
Yeah.
Because the jigsaw puzzle does, yeah, I mean, they're fun to do. I don't do them, but the ones that I've done, it is fun to match up all the colors and shapes, and then you step back. Oh yeah,
Yeah.
it actually makes an image. Yeah. That's
Exactly.
interesting. Okay. All right. I can connect with that. That's good. Yeah. And then your son, I was most intrigued by your son's art. And doing that as needlework, how'd that come about?
Well, so my son definitely got my creative gene, I'm happy to say, my younger son. His name's Ben. And he started doing these what's acrylic pour paintings. And I think why I thought they would translate well into cross stitch is because one of the type of full coverage that I love is the fractal full coverage pieces or the mandala full coverage pieces that have so many colors flowing into each other. And that's what his artwork is. So that's I thought, yeah, I'm gonna Ben, send me a picture.
Now, is he a painter, or how does he do his art?
It's acrylic pours, so it's acrylic paint that you add something to make it a little bit more flowy. And so he pours the paint onto a canvas and he has it on a, I don't even know what to call it, suspended on ropes from the ceiling, and he spins it. And depending on different like motions with the spinner, and he'll flick some of the paint off with his fingers so it flows different ways. If you want to, he posts his videos, like these little videos he does on Instagram. Ben Official is his Instagram name. It's really fascinating to see the way the paint flows and spins and what the outcome is. I'm darn proud of that kid.
I've seen that kind of art done. It's amazing.
It is.
I guess what amazes me is that in your mind, you can see that if I do this, this will happen. And
But there are times though, and this is the kind of fascinating thing, there are times that whatever the outcome is, he doesn't like it. And so he'll pour like a bunch of white paint or a bunch of black paint over top and spin it so it covers up what was done, and he'll start again. And of course, the mother in me thinks, oh my goodness, the amount of paint you're wasting. But it's art.
Well, there's that. So then, yeah, see, yeah, you got paint splattered all over, dripping on
Oh,
the
all
floor.
over. Yes. On his clothes. He got new white sneakers so he could have them paint spattered. Yeah.
Why not? Yeah. So
Yep.
is he able to do this as a profession, or is it a
Not yet. Not yet. He
okay.
still has a job working at a restaurant in Orlando, and this is his hope for the future.
Yeah, well, that's all right. Nothing
Yep.
wrong with having a target. That's all right.
Nope.
But that's, yeah, you're right about those fractals, 'cause that was I think probably the first full coverage piece I ever encountered was one of those fractals, and immediately you just stop and go, "Oh, that would be
Yeah.
so fun to create that." And then you think, "No, nah, I'm not doing that."
Oh, that takes so long to create that. Yep.
Yeah. But his art is neat. I didn't understand how he made it, so that's
Yeah, it's
now I
really
have a
cool.
better understanding of that. So when you started designing, what was you just was it the full coverage, or were you doing other things
No, I
before
started with the full coverage,
that?
because that's you know that's kind of what was suggested to me, and I kind of had all the elements. And it wasn't till I don't know whether you know
Way to
my
jump in the
memory is
deep
not the
end.
best in the world. Yeah, but you know that's the full coverage. This is going to sound very strange, I guess. The full coverage is easier because you're taking a picture and converting it. And the computer is doing the work. And I'm tweaking with how many colors, how big I want it. And then I go through and kind of clean up everything because the computer can do some strange things with color sometimes. But when I started to do the, I guess what you would call, I don't know, more normal, more traditional, designs, that's a matter of finding, you know, getting inspiration from the strangest places and then starting from scratch with a, you know, a basically a blank slate. So placement and shape and color, you know, all that has to be worked out.
Well, yeah, that's where the challenge comes in. So, and of course the the standard question, where do you get your inspiration? But one of yours where you had gotten it off of some tiles, and yeah, you just kind of, I mean, well, as a photographer, I'm sure your eye is trained that you walk around and everything you see is framed in a camera lens, and so you, yeah, you start to pick those things out, and then what portion of that can be a photo, and yeah, it's not a great leap to take those same kind of visual things and convert them to cross stitch pieces.
Exactly. And even things like the one piece that I did called Narnia, I don't believe I sent you a picture of that one because I don't have it completed, stitched yet. But that came from looking at wood, the carved wood of the front of a wardrobe. And there were triangles and squares and borders in the carving on this wardrobe. And I was like, oh, that's a cross-stitch design waiting to happen. There's I'm my brain right now, I get ideas from like three multimedia 3D. There's something that I'm working on that will have involve a layering of three different pieces of fabric, if it all comes together in reality like it is in my mind. I'm getting inspiration from macrame woven wall hangings where you'll have some of the intricate macrame knotting as traditional cross stitch, but then withdrawing some threads and weaving in other fibers and creating loops and fringes where the threads are drawn out. So yeah, I'm anything but traditional, really.
Well, I think that's one of the cool things about this hobby is you don't see a lot of it, but people being willing to mix techniques to create the art that they're after is I think one of the really neat things. I mean, I've had two or three guests that do that kind of thing where for me, people question, is needlework art? Well, yes, it is. But then when you start to do that kind of thing, it really eliminates that question about whether it's art. Yes, it is. Yeah, you're taking, you're creating the texture and the colors and the light reflection that you want with different techniques.
And one of the things that I really hope comes across to my viewers and to anybody that hopefully buys my designs is I encourage you to make it your own. I want you to change colors. I want you to eliminate or add. So many stitchers, and this was as true in the knitting world as in the stitching world, are, you know, very afraid to move outside of those lines. Well, the designer designed it that way. Isn't it kind of rude to change it? Well, I don't know how other designers feel, but I don't particularly care for orange and yellow. So I'm going to change the colors to make it something that I actually love. So, you know, I think that's my goal, to help people break out of the bounds and realize that they can put their own stamp on anything.
Yeah, I've not encountered any designer who is resistant to changing. I've heard about them and I've heard that they exist, But yeah, everybody I've talked to is like, help yourself. Go nuts.
Exactly.
Yeah, make it your own thing. If you don't like yellow, don't stitch with yellow. Find something else. Yeah. Well, and you even have on your website, you actually document the changes you make, which I think is great because it demonstrates to people not only can and should you do this, but here are examples of what happens when you do.
Right. And that started because I was getting more and more people asking me for my color conversions. And so, you know, it makes sense for me to note those all down for people. But again, it's the idea of, yes, I happen to use Victorian Motto sampler threads. That those are not repeatable. You can't get what I used. So find something compatible. Mm-hmm. You know, go to a store and hold up the color and see what you'd like, you know.
Yeah.
People are afraid to do that.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a comfort in just stitching what's laid out before you. You know it's going to be successful.
That's very true.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, there are times that I don't want to have to think too hard, so I'm just going to stitch the way it is.
Yep.
You know, different designs for different needs.
Yeah. Well, and that's an element of the whole hobby is that I can just let my mind go away and. Mm-hmm. And move my hands and yeah, it's relaxing. Yes. So you just.
And end up with something pretty.
Yeah. 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 Something rather than a couple of hours wasted watching Instagram or something. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. That.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. Getting lost in social media.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody the other day posted that they had gone a week without social media, complete cutoff.
Hmm.
And I thought, you know, I wonder how many hours I would have for productive things.
Yeah,
probably should think pretty hard about that because now we all have the app in there that keeps track of how many hours. I probably should turn that on and just scare myself. just get a little come to Jesus moment. Yeah, way too many hours. Scrolling through stuff, to no end.
Right, and that's very true.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Now you as a designer, you stitch other people's work.
Oh yeah, all the time. I have so many things that I'm. Well, let's just say again, I'm weird. I'm weird out in the design world. You know, I'm doing this because it's. Something that's calling to me because I have this need to create. I'm not doing it to make it a business.
Mm-hmm.
So I do keep fairly strict business hours with my time. So my daytime is my business hours. So when I need to do business stitching, I will do it during the day. When I work on the computer, I will do it during the day. I had a time in my life when I was in the digital scrapbooking world and had a laptop that I was working on that I spent way too much time focused on that and not on, and it, you know, I enjoyed it. It was something I enjoyed. I enjoyed creating layouts for my products, but I got so wrapped up in it that I didn't have any balance in my life.
Yeah.
And one thing I am not going to do is allow that to happen at this stage of my life.
Yeah.
So in the mornings, in the evenings, that's my time to stitch whatever I want. And more often than not, it's somebody else's work.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, there is a discipline there because you have to contain that no matter what you're doing. You have to find some way, that balance. So that gives you that in the morning and the evening, then that gives you the chance to not feel any pressure when you're stitching to deliver something.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And really, I don't allow myself to feel pressure to deliver something anyway. When I put a design out, I'm thrilled with it. The next design is calling to me, but it's not like I'm like the designers that are going to market that have a certain number of designs that they need to have ready for market. That will never be a model that I'm going to follow. I will never offer paper charts. I live in an RV. I'm not going to have paper surrounding me. You know, I offer PDFs. If you want to print it, you're welcome to. I know there's Creative Poppy that I could sign up with or see if they would accept me for, to sell print on demand. Who knows, maybe down the road. But at this point, I enjoy doing this. I love the designs I'm creating, but it is not the center of my life, basically.
Well, that's good. That's good. When you're stitching other people's work, I mean, for me, as a magazine editor, competitive magazines, I'll leaf through them, but I do not read them. I never have, and that's a conscious decision. I have never sat down and read competitive magazines cover to cover or even to any degree at all, because I don't want them influencing what I do as editor of my magazine. You know, to me, it's like, oh, they did that. Well, I can't do that. No, right. I should be free to do what I think is best for what my magazine is doing and the audience. Do you find that influences your design work, or are you able to compartmentalize that?
I would say the only way it influences my design work is to say, oh, look, I don't need to be symmetrical. Or just, you know, I guess I'll back up and say I'm a very symmetrical person, and when things aren't symmetrical, it does bother me. But I think a lot of times we think, okay, this has to be this color. This flower should look like a flower. You know, this tree should look like a tree. And if it doesn't, that's okay, because that's the designer's own interpretation. So I think it has helped in me giving myself permission to do things a little wonky.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. Well, because for me, it's the question of do you live in your own little tunnel, your own little design tunnel, and if you see other people's work and actually stitch it, you know, does that open you up, or does that drag you down that path when, you know, you go, well, wait a minute, am I really just copying what they're doing? And how do you resist that?
I would say that's totally personality driven.
Okay.
Yeah, if you have a strong design ethic, isn't the word I'm looking for, but a strong design style, I doubt you're going to be dragged into somebody else's style or way of doing things.
Okay. I could see that. I don't know. I've never designed, so I don't know how I would react,
But by the same token, so again, harking back to my days in the digital scrapbooking world, the store that I worked at was called Scrap Girls, and the person
that's
that was
rather
in charge
sexist.
Of the it is, isn't it? Yes. No comment. And the person that was in charge of the art department, the graphic designers, was hugely experienced in that world. And she would tell us, you know, one of the designers would create something, and there might be somebody on another competing site who created basically the same thing. There was no collaboration. There was no, it's not like you talked or saw the same thing. It's just organically in the world, in any art world, you have things happening out in the greater world that triggers. And so you would have the same type of things created. And it wasn't like you copied anything. It just is something that happened. And it happened often enough that you realized, again, it was just an organic thing that happens in the art world, regardless of what medium you're talking about. And so I think having that as my background, I realized that, that's just the way the creative world works.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that makes sense or not, but.
It does to me. Yes. And, you know, you look at lawsuits for music where you stole part of my song. And, you look at the history of music, at some point there has to be some overlap.
Right, There's no new thing under the sun.
Right. There are obvious instances where someone actually did copy the piece of the song.
Right, exactly.
But in general, there are so many rhythms, there are so many combinations, only so many combinations of notes, and you're going to overlap. Right. And it's going to happen in any kind of art. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's just the mental process that goes into this intrigues me, and how people deal with it and still come out with creative and original art. And
Right.
it's
Yeah, and you think about something like cross stitch, where this has been something that's been done for hundreds and hundreds of years, yet people are still coming up with original designs. And there may be motifs that are the same. Quaker motifs are the same across a bunch of different Quaker designs, but the way they're put together, the way they flow, whatever the theme is, that can be changed enough that it creates a whole new fresh look. And, we just keep chugging along.
Yeah, and other part of that is the materials that we have today, the threads
Oh,
and the
yes.
ground cloth change the whole approach. What even if you copy, it's
Right.
still there's
Oh,
so many
yeah.
options just with the materials you use.
Yep. Again, make it your own.
Do you find that is it DMC, is that your base when you design? Do you work with that, or how, what?
I try to always have the conversion for DMC. Now, of course, my full coverage are all DMC, definitely. But my other design work, I prefer to stitch with overdyes or silks. So I'm more often than not going to be designing, at least with those in mind. Like the design I'm currently working on, I just pulled out all the overdyes that I want to use for it, and then I convert it to DMC so that it's charted in both. So, because I understand not everybody can afford the overdyes, not everybody wants to use them. So I try and make it as easy for people as possible. Having said that, though, the Cosmo design that I just put out, because it is meant specifically for people to give Cosmo a try, it is only charted in Cosmo.
I have to say, I don't know why it won't leave my head, but I'm most curious to see in a few months or even a year. Whether
Yeah.
whether Cosmo is starting to really take a hold in the hobby.
Yeah. It will take a commitment from stores, more of the mainline stores, to carry it.
It and 500 other lines of thread.
Exactly, exactly.
Those store owners, just keeping up with threads alone has just got to
Oh,
be
I
a,
know.
oh geez, just
I
we're out of
know.
that color again, or
I I would never, seeing what it was like to own a yarn store, working in a yarn store and working closely with the owner, there's no way I would ever own a store. You have no free time.
Oh, exactly. But just threads alone as a store owner, all right, I've got a complete store full of threads hanging everywhere, and you walk in and you want the one color I don't have, you've got to be kidding me.
Or the one line that I don't carry.
And how do you keep up with that? I mean, even if you have it all databased and computer and everything else, still just to keep it ordered and keep it in stock is, and then some designer comes along and calls for a color and you're out of it overnight, and the orders are backing up, and oh boy,
Yeah, and then you throw a pandemic on top of it.
Where not only can you can order it, but good luck.
Yeah, you'll get it sometime.
And people are clamoring for it, and every single one of them has eight other projects already kitted up and could go stitch those.
Go stitch that.
I'll let you know when I have the stuff in. It's but yeah, I mean, we're a generation that wants it yesterday all the time.
Oh, I know.
So So when you stitch in the evening, are we hoop, scroll frame, depends? Are you a stitch in hand?
Depends. It's becoming more and more depends. Pretty much, I'd say 90 to 95% in hand. But with my bigger projects, I just started. I'm not a sampler person, as you might have guessed. I'm not, traditional. I'm not a big sampler person, but I do love band samplers. And I just started the Margaret Howden sampler from the Exemplary Shop. I had to put that on a scroll rod because there's just so much fabric. My full coverage designs I do on a Q-snap. The big designs, I just started the Baroque sampler from the Historische Werkmuster site in Germany. And any design that has so much fabric, I'm just more comfortable having that on a Q-snap or a scroll frame. But other than that, I always stitch in hand.
I see, I admire that. I can't stitch in hand. Drives me nuts.
Oh,
But
yeah, the sewing method is so much faster. I just flow along.
All right, so then you really with that, because I won't use that because I don't like what it does to the threads, but you can really see in the Cosmo thread then how that holds up with that sewing method.
Oh, yeah.
Now I tried that sewing method a couple times. I just felt like it was just scrubbing up the threads. I didn't like it.
So why do you think it would scrub up the threads doing that? I mean, you're still going in and out of the fabric the same number of times.
Because I feel like you're dragging it over the surface of the fabric more, where if you're going straight up and down, because I stitch two-handed, and you got a needle that's making a big enough hole, I don't feel like it. With the sewing, I'm really going over the surface of the ground cloth strands, or at least
Kinda.
that's the way I feel about it. So
Yeah.
this works better for
Interesting.
me. I don't know, and I'm sure that's one of those we could argue and compare till we all fall
Well,
asleep.
and
And
again, there's something for everybody out there.
And I can see that it's faster. I can see that it's a faster technique. I didn't. The times I did it, I just didn't like what it did to the thread, and it may have been I was using a silk thread that was pretty fragile and it was tearing it up. And
Yeah, so many variables. I do stitch two-handed when I'm working with a frame.
To me that's automatic. I was reading something the other day where or listening to something where somebody said that their other hand just wouldn't work. It just
Yeah, it takes, again, it's a skill, it's a learned skill, but and I stitch with my left hand underneath, but I tried to switch it so my right hand, my dominant hand was underneath, and I am not nearly as fast with my left hand with my right hand underneath. So yeah, again, got to
Yeah.
figure it out and practice and
Now see, that's
muscle
where,
memory.
because I'm left-handed, so my left hand is on top, and people talk about their dominant hand being underneath because you don't have to think about it,
Yeah, see.
and I don't think about it at all. I,
I don't either.
yeah,
Yeah.
and
That just seemed the most my dominant hand on top, non-dominant on the
yep,
bottom. That just seemed the most natural way for me.
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't study it because it's just natural for me. So, I mean, I learned two-handed right out of the gate with needlepoint on a scroll frame, and that's just the people who taught me this is how you do it. And so I frankly don't know any different.
Don't know any better.
No, well, and when I do, have tried just stitching one-handed. It's like, oh man, my arm is getting tired going up and down and over and out. And
It's a lot of work.
skip that noise. Put it on a rack and
That's
just
right. Let me
go.
go. It's funny.
Jan, thank you. This has been
Oh,
fun.
thank you, Gary. Yes, it's been a lot of fun.
Enjoyed
Hour
it.
flew by.
It'll happen every time. Every time.
Excellent.
All right, thanks, Jan, and thanks to everybody for listening.